guy that we have on the line right now, but he is one of my favorite people in the wrestling business because they probably don't get more genuine and nicer than this gentleman that we have here. And he is going to begin his journey into the world of the Hall of Fame. And I want to congratulate him first. I haven't even talked to him yet to say congratulations. He's been in the business long enough, by God, and has many contributions. And I'd like to welcome right now the one and only Monster Abyss. Chris, how in the hell are you doing? And I'm going to go back and forth from calling you Chris to Abyss just because it's what I do.
That's no problem at all, Bruce. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be on with you. You know, I'm a huge fan of the show, as you know, you know, huge fan of you and Conrad. And it's an honor to be on, man. Thank you so much.
Well, now everybody, you got to make sure that everybody introduces you going forward as Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I got the moniker now.
Yeah, so what do you think about that, man? What the hell is going on there?
I'm excited about it. You know, I was, you know, thrilled, and when I found out about it, you know, I was taken back. You know, my heart fell into my stomach. You know, I was starting to think it wasn't going to happen. You know, I mean, you know, I thought it was going to happen a couple years ago, and thought it was going to happen last year. You know, we didn't even do the Hall of Fame last year. You know, you know, this year when it was announced, I was just taken back. You know, it's an emotional moment, man. You know, like 17 years, you know, in the making. You know, I've, going on 17 years, I've been with TNA and Impact, and you know, it was it's such a great feeling of you know, internal accomplishment to be recognized for my body of work over that time period. And you know, you know, emotional and taken back by it. It's you know, it's a great, great feeling.
Well, I got to be honest with you. When I saw the video that was promoting the Hall of Fame, I was trying to figure out who the hell the young guy was in the very first shot that they had coming out with all of his teeth and long hair, strapping baby face, walking in the ring. What the hell was that?
You know, Bruce, that was the very, very first TNA show. That was July 19th of 2002. That was the very first Wednesday Night Live pay-per-view from Huntsville, Alabama. And, you know, truth be told, I didn't get booked on that thing till the week before. And Bob Ryder actually called me. And this is a funny story. This is something your listeners, I think, will like. Not a lot of people know, but I was sitting at a 1-800 call directory for the Maury Povich show. I was selling DNA testing for the Maury Povich show, you know, taking any job I could to support my indie wrestling habit at the time. And Bob Ryder called me, and I'd never spoken to Bob Ryder ever. And Bob Ryder said, you know, hey kid, how would you like to be on the very first TNA pay-per-view? And I was like, you know, sign me up immediately. You know, I'm in. I had had 2 strikes out of 3 at that call center for being late, so I had 1 more strike to go. So I went to my boss and said, hey, I just got offered this deal. And they're like, well, you know, you got 1 more strike. And I walked out the front door and never came back, and went down and did the first ever TNA pay-per-view. And, you know, I was on top of the world. It was the first time I'd ever been on live TV, let alone pay-per-view. And, you know, you can see that in my face, I think, when I'm walking down the ring. You know, that smile on my face was a huge smile, to say the least.
Were you a baby face?
I don't know what I was then, to be honest with you, Bruce. I, you know, I was a filler. You know, there was 30 men in it, and Shamrock ended up going on to win it. And, you know, I was definitely a filler. You know, at that time, you know, TNA was inundated with, you know, a lot of WCW talent. The company had folded just a couple of years prior, and you know, a lot of ECW and a lot of WCW talent. And I was a relatively, you know, not relatively, I was a nobody, and you know, no one knew who I was, and you know, I had had some connections there, you know, through the indies and stuff like that. So, you know, my name popped up and they gave me a call to be on it. But, you know, I went down and did that first one with no guarantees and nothing going forward. And, you know, I was just thrilled to be there and be a part of it at that time. And, you know, that's a moment I'll definitely never forget.
So who was in charge of things then? Was that Jerry Jarrett, huh?
Yes, it was. It was Jerry and Jeff.
Good luck, God. How long did it take to get a finish out of this? Well, first, Chris, can you do the K and the O and the B. Can you do, huh?
That was that. Yeah, that's pretty good. As I recall it, that was somewhat like it. Yeah, I mean.
What the hell was that? All of a sudden, you started cutting out bad. What happened? What? In English, you sounded like a Jerry Jarrett robot there for a second.
Am I better now?
You're better now.
Yeah. Well, that was what I was saying was that was a pretty, pretty solid rendition of Jerry and how that conversation went. But I'll be honest with you, I don't remember how any of those conversations went that day. I was literally on cloud nine and pissing myself that I was there and that I was getting the opportunity.
Well, where had you been before that? Where had you been before you started with TNA?
I started in '95. And I started at a school called Bone Crushers in Cincinnati, Ohio, that's still here to this day. He's had it for about 25 years. And, I don't know if you know him or not, Bruce, but Roger Ruffin, he refereed a lot in the 80s and 90s. He refereed Brett and Piper at WrestleMania 7. You know, he was a good friend of Earl Hebner's. So Earl kind of got him in there and got him some opportunities there. And you know, he opened up his school in Price Hill, Ohio. And I went up one day and, you know, I remember taking a break. You know, I graduated from college, you know, with my master's, and I was working for the minor league hockey team in Cincinnati, and I was on lunch break and I heard this wrestling commercial, this school. And I was like, man, let me go check this out. So I drove up there on my break with my suit and tie on, walked into this place, and it looked like the walls were about to fall in on it. It was a dumpy old gym, and I remember Roger walking out, and I recognized him right away. That's the guy right there that refereed all those WWF matches at the Richfield Coliseum in Cleveland, Ohio, that I'd gone to when I was a kid growing up. And I dove right in, man. I dropped everything. I ended up getting fired from the Cyclones about a year later just because I so consumed with wrestling and training and getting out and doing indies and stuff like that. So, you know, that's kind of how it started in 95. And from 95 to 2002, I was strictly just, you know, busting my butt and doing indies and, you know, in Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, a little bit of Tennessee, you know, just small independent promotions and so forth. And just kind of working my butt up, trying to get an opportunity, you know, and then, like I said, that leads to Bob Ryder calling in 2002 to get on that first TNA pay-per-view and just went from there.
So who the hell came up with Abyss?
Dutch, Dirty Dutch Mantel.
Dutchman.
I could sit here and talk about Dutch for 3 days, you know, everything he did for me. I certainly wouldn't be here without him. You know, there's no doubt about it. I'm proud to say it. You know, what he did for me, you know, when I did that first pay-per-view, Bruce, you know, I was hoping something was going to come out of it, you know, and like I said, they were inundated with WCW talent and name, guys that had names. And so, you know, I remember Jerry calling me, you know, and Jerry said, hey, we really don't have anything for you right now, you know, maybe down the road. And I was pretty devastated. You know, I was kind of bummed, and I thought it was going to lead to something. And But Dutch was an agent on that show. Dutch actually agented that first pay-per-view, and I had seen him out on the road on the Indies a couple of times, but we had never talked. But we talked really in depth and changed numbers and started talking. So I called him after Jerry called me, and I said, Dutch, you know, they don't got nothing for me. And Dutch was like, well, why don't you come down to Puerto Rico for a few months? And I was like, Puerto Rico? Wow, I mean, you know, never thought of that. So he said, come on down, we'll give you a weekly salary. And, you know, at the time, it was more money than I'd ever remotely seen, and it wasn't a lot, but it was more money than I'd ever seen in the business. And, you know, I came down there, stayed in the house, and, you know, went to the gym every morning and wrestled. You know, it was, to me, I was fortunate enough to have a taste of the territory, kind of, because, you know, we ran Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you know, four nights a week, and Saturday was always TV, and it was the greatest thing I ever did. It was the greatest move I ever made. I was supposed to go for 3 months, and I ended up staying for a year, and, you know, I just learned so much. I was around Dutch, you know, 24/7. Savio Vega kind of was there as well. I can't tell you how much I learned from him, and, you know, it was a great, great career move. It really prepared me. I thought I was pretty good when I went there, and I wasn't. And that place really, really, you know, and Dutch and Savio and the company really, really helped shape me.
Wow. And then, so that was 2000.
That was
2003?
Yeah, that was, I went down in June, oh wait, I went down in July of 02, right after that. I went down a week after that pay-per-view. No, 2 weeks later, I think, after that pay-per-view, I stayed for the entire year to July of 03. And then in July of 03, you know, it'd been a year, and I felt like I was, you know, I needed to do something. And I couldn't stay there forever, although I loved it there. And to this day, I credit Puerto Rico with a lot of the success I was able to have and how much it taught me. But it was definitely time to go, you know, time to try to do something else. And obviously my goal was to come stateside and do something. And you know, Dutch right there, you know, Dutch hooked me up with Jeff Jarrett. And I came back in July of 03, a year later. And I landed on a Sunday, and on that Wednesday night live, pay-per-view from the Nashville, fairgrounds there, I had my dark match with Julio De Niro. It was against Julio De Niro with Lexi LaRie in his corner, who became Mickey James. And we did the dark match, and Jeff and Jerry hired me right after it. I mean, I got my first contract the next day. And I, you know, the rest is history. I've been there for 17 years, but, you know, it was a great feeling, and you know, especially after coming back from Puerto Rico for a whole year, you know, it was a great feeling that it had paid off, and that I got a little bit, you know, rewarded and for it. And, you know, I can't even begin to tell you, you know, how much that meant to me that, you know, that Jeff had the faith in me. And Jeff, you know, he's another one I could talk about for hours that did an awful lot for my career over the years, to say the least.
So I'm going to jump around here a little bit because, when I first started doing the podcast, probably, well, still is to this day, my most downloaded podcast is when I talked about my time in TNA.
Yeah.
Obviously, you were a big part of that because you had been there for a long time. And I made a comment in there that I felt that you had never gone to WWE out of just insecurity or fear. I forget what the hell I said. And that got a nice response from you saying basically, hey, motherfucker, I wasn't afraid. I'm just loyal and I loved where I was. To which I was like, okay,
I remember that.
You know what? Then okay. Good for you. I mean, no, and that's how I think what I basically responded was, yeah, good. And I brought it up the next
you
day.
Did.
More than anything, I appreciated you listening to the podcast. I actually heard it. I was like, somebody listened, man. They're good. It's good. So that part I was happy about. And I remember, you know, talking a little bit about that on the show. But why, you know, you were offered or you had tryouts. Did you ever do tryouts at WWE? How serious were you ever thinking about, you know, making the move?
You know, I never had a tryout there. When I came back in 03 and started with TNA, you know, I was, but you know, again, being there from the ground up, you know, I was an original member, original part of that crew, original part of Jeff's crew there, you know, along with AJ and some others, you know, and so, you know, I really got a lot of exposure and so forth. So when 2006 came around, they did offer me, you know, and, you know, it's, I think it's been well documented, you know, it's, they, you know, at the time, Tommy Dreamer was with Johnny Ace and they had, you know, my contract had expired with TNA at the time. And you know, they called me and said, hey, you know, we got an offer for you and, you know, we're probably going to go the Undertaker route. And, you know, I was right there, man. I was just about to take it. And I just, you know, that leads to a lot of the innuendo, as Conrad would say, rumor and innuendo.
Yeah, that's what I say. He thinks that everything that Dave Meltzer writes is fact. and I know otherwise.
But, I wanted it, you know, but at the time, and I always tell people this, you know, that, because they related to the TNA that they saw, you know, later on when things weren't so good. But you know, at that time in 2006, man, the company was rocking. You know, when I say rocking, I mean we were doing, you know, we had our niche. We were doing 1.4 to 1.7 million people a week on Spike TV. We started international touring all over the world, the UK and India and some other places. You know, the action figures came out. The very first that this action figure was out, and you know, we were touring. We were doing house shows. You know, we were on the road. You know, we were on the road a good amount. I don't know if it was a WWE schedule, but it was a pretty solid schedule. And so I just, you know, I was like, man, I'm part of the ground floor of this thing. Do I really want to take a chance and drop this and go somewhere and maybe just be a number? You know, I didn't know. You know, it just meant more to me, you know, to stay and be a part of the what I helped start and what I helped build. And Bruce, you know me, and I don't mind saying it. I am insecure, and I think a lot of wrestlers are, obviously, but I'm one of the most insecure guys you'll ever meet. And that's always been an Achilles heel for me. And, you know, I've worked on it and gotten better here and there, but, you know, I am who I am. And, you know, but the reason never had anything to do with stage fright or, you know, I've never been afraid of any stage, and I don't mind saying that. It simply had to do with the fact that I thought, you know, I was, you know, in a great position with the company. The company was really going places. I was a staple of the company. I was the monster of the company, and I didn't want to gamble that, and you know, that's why.
Well, you know, at the same time, I think that. But let me ask you this: your biggest frustration with TNA during that time, during this time, whatever, and it's, you know, it's okay. You can say me.
Are you asking me, is that a question? What my
biggest what was your biggest frustration during your time with them? I mean, it's...
You know, my biggest frustration, Bruce, and I only have one, because, again, I love the company, man, and I still love it to this day, and that's why I'm still there. And my biggest frustration, not just throughout the history of the company, was that I felt that they took the impact, the homegrown talent, the guys that had been there, the guys that got the company off the ground and up and running and got the Fox Sports deal and then got the Spike deal. And a lot of times when a WWE guy came available on the market, they snatched him right up and put him right up on top over all of us. And I just felt that was not a great way to do things. I thought I felt that it sent a bad message to the wrestling community and to our fans that, okay, these guys are better than your guys. And, you know, and I don't think it did anything to help grow the company. I think it did on the short term, obviously, because, you know, these guys were coming in off WWE television and, you know, that's hot. You know, there's nothing out of them WWE TV and nothing that it ever will be, probably. And so, but that was frustrating, you know, and it blamed me, man. The guys that they brought in, great guys, and majority of them are dear friends of mine to this day. So it was never anything personal or anything like that. It was just, you know, and I worked with every one of them that came in, from Christian Cage to Rhino to you name it, and had great matches with them and became great friends with them. But my frustration was always that I kind of felt that, you know, the originals, the guys that had done the heavy lifting, had kind of, you know, at times kind of got pushed aside.
Well, do you think that was something from the booking end, or do you think it was just from the talent end that they didn't measure up, or was it just something that every time they came in, that whether it be Dixie or whoever was in charge of talent at the time, just felt they were better than what they had?
I don't think I don't know the answer to that question 100%, Bruce, but I know the perception was never that these guys were better. The perception always was that these guys were bigger stars, you know, and they were coming in off of WWE television. And there's, like I said a second ago, there's nothing more powerful, you know, than that television. So you know, I definitely see that. I see Dixie's standpoint. I see the company's standpoint of, you know, these guys are stars that are coming in off a highly watched show, doing a rating, you know, drawing, you know, two, three, four times more people watching them. So that was my perception, was that, you know, they were just bigger stars. They weren't better workers or better athletes or better wrestlers. They were just bigger stars. And that got, like I said, it got a little frustrating. And it was frustrating. It never affected my day-to-day. It never affected guys like AJ and other guys there, you know, that I know they shared the same frustration, you know, you know, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of a, you know, that was just kind of, I think, the frustration of the original guys, you know, the guys that had done a lot of the heavy lifting at that point.
Well, no, one thing that I get a lot of flack for, and I'll defend it till the day I die, was, you know, a lot of people blame me or, you know, point the finger at me when I finally got rid of you and brought in your brother, who, by the way, I like your brother a lot more than you.
yes, you are on record for that.
He is so much easier to deal with, and just, you know, just so much more talented too. I mean, that in and of itself. But what did you think of taking the mask off? And really, because I know what you told me at the time, and I thought that it was a lot of fun, and I thought it was a nice departure and a fun story what we did. But, you know, through the years I've heard people say, oh, no, he hated it and was embarrassed by it and hated taking the mask off. So right here for the record, you know,
yeah.
What did you think of the Joseph Park thing? And I don't care if you say it sucks. I mean, cool.
Bruce, I'll tell you the honest goodness truth, and from the bottom of my heart, it's one of the smartest and one of the greatest moves I ever made. And let me just say, let me step back. I did hate it at the beginning. I hated it. I was scared to death of it. I was upset that the feeling was, let's kind of shove Abyss to the side here and let's do something else with me. And I was upset, man. I had to really wrap my head around it for a while. I wasn't more upset. I was more scared. You know, that's probably a better word to describe it. You know, stepping out of that comfort zone, you know, at that time I had been 12 or 13 years of the Monster Abyss, the mask, the hardcore style, the, you know, everything that came along with it. And you know, and everybody hates change, and wrestlers really hate change. And, And, you know, it was a drastic change. So I was very, very afraid of it and very scared of it. And I also felt like, you know, wow, man, I've spent the last, 15 years honing this character and honing up this. And you know, now we're just going to kind of turn our backs on it. That was my original feelings of it, you know. But I got to tell you, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, when I started doing it, I was like, holy smokes, there's something here. We got something. I can do this. And I'm so happy that we did it now because it made me realize that change can be good, and it also made me really hunker down and dive into the character and wrap my hands around it. And, you know, I've become a little complacent as a Biff. You know, I've done 100 hardcore matches on pay-per-view and TV and done all this and that and done the same spots a million times. And, you know, looking back on it, there was, you know, I did need some freshening up. And, you know, Joseph Park allowed me to show the wrestling world, the company, the fans, my peers, that I wasn't just a monster and I could do other stuff. You know, Joseph Park allowed me to show my range and show that I could do more, you know, especially, you know, verbalizing and acting, you know, that's stuff that just never really got to show. And Joseph Park allowed me to do that. And I would categorize it on one part. It was fun, man. You nailed it on the head. I had a blast with it. When we did the Bully Ray match, the first Bully Ray match with Bubba, and it was in Dallas, I believe, at Bound for Glory there. And I'll never forget you coming up to me the night before in the hotel, and you gave me the finish. And you know, we were talking, and I was like, holy smokes, Bruce, that is just an awesome finish, man. I just love that. It was the second Abyss finish, you know, the Abyss from Under the Ring finish. And you laid it on me, and I was like, holy smokes, Bruce, I just love that. And you ripped me because I was wearing a wintertime corduroy jacket. It was 104 degrees in Dallas, Texas. I'll never forget that too. I never wore that jacket again after. To be a 180 from Abyss, and you know, to step through the ropes and not know how to do it, and pick up a tear on the wrong end, and it was challenging to be something that I wasn't, and to be a complete opposite of who I was. And, you know, it was a great challenge, and we had a ton of fun with it. And, you and David Magana and Matt Conway really, 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 you know, guided me and helped me and wrote some great stuff for the character. And, you know, I love to this day, I'll always have a special place in my heart for that character. And truth be told, and I'm sure you would agree, but Joseph Park is more who I am than Abyss is. You know, that's Joseph Park's kind of a really extension of Chris Park, and I loved it. It was again one of the best things I ever did. I think if I would have continued as Abyss, I don't think I would have had the longevity, honestly, that I ended up having with Joseph Park, and then integrating Abyss back into it down the road as we went.
Well, for me, it was a lot of fun just because I guess probably I share the same sentiment. I thought that Joseph Park was closer to who you are.
Yeah.
It came across as genuine for me. And plus, I had fun. You know, I just had a lot of fun with that character and thinking of different things to do because to me, there was only so much you could do with the monster of this.
I was tapped out at that point, you know, to a large extent. And, you know, I had done a lot, I had done everything, and very fortunate enough to have done a lot and done everything. And so there wasn't a lot left, but, you know, like I said, those memories, that 2012-13 with you and David and Matt, and, you know, that you guys really, really, really wrote some great stuff and put the character in some great situations to succeed. And you know, it was fun, man. I had a blast, and, you know, so that there's your answer. I mean, Joseph Park was, you know, and still is, you know, a big part of me. I'm so happy that I did it.
Well, if you could do one thing in the business, you get your choice of doing whatever the hell you want to do. You know, wrestle, be an agent, produce, direct, be any character you want to be, you know, even just referee, promote. What is it that makes you tick? What is it, the one thing that you would want to do more than anything else?
At this point, you mean?
Yeah, just ever in general, man. Tell me what that dream is. Tell me what it is that you would want to do more than anything else. You can make anything happen. What is it?
God, man. I don't know. But you know what? I mean, I've got a few, you know, I've never had the skills to direct. And, you know, I've sat in the truck and watched guys like David Sahadi and that and the incredible job that he did. And, you know, I could, you know, that's something that's a little over me and something I probably wouldn't be very good at, you know, certainly without a lot of training. But, you know, for me, the dream job, you know, is always, I don't care if it's an agent or a producer or a writer, just the interaction with the talent. You know, since I've kind of slowed down a little bit and I'm doing more producing and aging and backstage, you know, this is a very self-serving business, Bruce. We all know that. And, you know, everyone worries about themselves, and I was no different. And I never thought that I would get a feeling like I got when I went to the ring. I never thought I'd get that feeling working with two guys or two young ladies on a match and helping them put it together and produce and aging it. And I was wrong. You know, the first time I ever did it, I was like, man, this is a great feeling. You know, when I saw the guys go out there and have success, and I was like, man, you know, I helped them with that. I helped them smooth out the edges and this, that, or, you know, don't do this or do that. And that, I never, at that point, I, you know, when I first aged, I realized that, you know, there was more to this business than just me and being in the ring and just wrestling and titles and angles and storylines, you know, to actually help two younger guys or women that maybe avoid some of the mistakes I made and so forth. You know, that feeling I got, I'll never forget it. The first time I was like, man, this is a great feeling. So it was an opener for me. And I guess that would be my dream job. It's just anything where I can interact with talent, anything where I can, you know, work with young men and women on this business that are trying to achieve their goals and help them achieve the goals for themselves and for the company, you know. And I'd say that's probably it, you know, not to give you a long-winded answer, but anything where I can interact on a regular basis with the talent would be a dream job.
What's your biggest accomplishment in the business?
My biggest accomplishment in the business is making it in the business, I think. You know, I mean, this business is not an easy business to make it in, you know, and, you know, when, you know, I certainly never thought I was going to have the success that I was fortunate enough to have. And, you know, when I first started out on this thing in the Indies, and I never dreamt of working with Mick Foley or Hulk Hogan or Ric Flair or Bruce Pritchard or, I can go down the list, you know, and Sting. I never dreamt of ever working with these guys or being in the ring with them. That was a pipe dream for me, man. And, you know, it came true. And I was like, holy smokes. I mean, here I am. I'm standing in the ring with Hulk Hogan or Sting or, you know, and so my biggest accomplishment in the business is just making it in the business, in a business that's not easy to make it in. You know, I mean, I tell guys when I do seminars, you know, the truth be told, you've got about as much chance of making it in this business as you do of becoming an A-list celebrity in Hollywood. It's that hard. There's that many guys and women out there that are trying to get in and trying to get a spot. And, you know, so for me, that's the biggest accomplishment, you know, overall. It's just, hey, I made it, you know, and that's what makes the Hall of Fame thing more special, I think, is that, you know, just being recognized for that body of work and so forth, I think, is, you know. I mean, there's a lot of individual moments, you know, like, you know, winning my first world title against Sting in 07 was something I'll never forget. You know, main eventing the very first ever lockdown pay-per-view in 2005 with AJ. You know, it was the first time either one of us were the first time either one of us had ever main evented a Sunday Live pay-per-view, you know. And we went out there and tore it down. And You know, so those more individual moments I'll never forget. But overall, biggest accomplishment is just making it.
What about your biggest disappointment? Was there ever somebody that maybe you idolized as a kid growing up and just thought, oh, man, this person is the greatest, and then you meet them and you work with them and you go, oh, fuck.
Yeah, there was a couple, man, and I don't want to say, I don't want to bury anybody or put anybody down. It's just, you know, it's not who I am, but there was a couple, you know, but when I say a couple, I mean a couple, you know, 98% of, you know, who I worked with, you know, working with Hulk, you know, just, you know, I was scared to death the first time I met him. I'll never forget when I met him and shook his hand, and I didn't know what to think, you know, and I didn't know what was going to happen, and you know, it was a big change for the company. You know, Jeff was gone, and Eric was in charge, and here comes Hulk, and I'm just, like, my eyes are just popping out of my head, like, wow, what's next? What's going to happen? And, you know, the relationship that I ended up building with Hulk was just unbelievable. I pinched myself every day. You know, I got to know the Hulk. I got to know Terry, and you know, he was so gracious to me. He was to the whole locker room. He took his time and talked to everybody and pulled people aside and gave them advice and, you know, was humorous with the boys and fun and interactive. And, you know, me personally, he took me under his wing, and we'd go have sushi together, you know, for lunch. And, you know, I'd hang out at the house with him and Jennifer, and, you know, and I just couldn't believe it, you know, that he had this faith in me. And you know, that's something that, you know, I'll never forget. And that's something that's a relationship right there that I never thought I'd have, but I do. And it's, you know, it's just great, great, you know, like I couldn't believe it. And, you know, and to this day, it's something I'll never forget that. And, you know, 98% of the people I worked with were like that. Sting was another one, you know, I mean, Sting was, you know, I was very intimidated. You know, when I first worked with Sting, I was really young. I had just kind of gotten off the ground a little bit, just started getting pushed by the company, you know, a little bit, and started getting, you know, over a little bit. And then I got put with Sting. You know, we were married to each other for that whole year in 07 and 08. You know, just, oh, God, I mean, the greatest human being you'd ever want to be around, genuinely took an interest in me personally and professionally, and you know, we had some great, great times together, some great matches together, and you know, so those are the memories I focus on. You know, yeah, there were some interactions that weren't as good, but those are the ones I remember and focus on.
What's next, man? What's next? Where are you going to go from here? You're gonna you're working backstage. You're helping produce, but your wrestling days aren't over. And I kind of look at you and that gimmick. And frankly, your brother, as I must state one more time, much nicer, much better than you.
you always liked him a lot more.
I always did. He was always my favorite. No, I mean Joseph was always my favorite, man. I look, I'll say it to your face. I like Joseph so much more, man. Plus, his hygiene was better.
He was a lot more fashionable too, wasn't he?
A much more fashionable, but I think Joseph spent a little more time under the hot water. Is all I'm saying. He had a toothbrush, used it, and just was just not as paranoid. You know, I just no other way to say it, but he's just much better than you. So what's next for you and or Joe or anybody? what's going to be next, man?
Well, yeah, you kind of touched on it, Bruce. You know, still with the company, I re-signed back in August. I re-signed. I'm doing exactly what you said. I'll be heavily involved backstage producing and agenting. I'm still wrestling. You know, you'll still see the Monster Abyss, to your chagrin, and you'll still, to your happiness, you'll still see a little bit of my brother Joseph Park. So I'm definitely not stepping away from the ring. You know, I've got a full, definitely as far as regionally, you know, out on the road, I'm, you know, going to be doing a ton of indies and, so forth. But as far as the company goes, you know, I'll still be, you'll still see the Monster Abyss on television and Joseph Park. And then, again, backstage, you know, producing in Asia Day and, you know, helping the young talent. We've got a really young roster there, you know, a very hungry roster, but very, very young. And, I really feel that, you know, it's a great opportunity to give back, and it's time to give back. And I think everybody in this business should have that mindset of, you know, there comes a time where it's not about you no more, and you got to give back. And so I'll continue to do that. And, you know, like I said, you'll still see the Monster Abyss raising hell in the ring and Joseph Park causing people to bend over belly laughing. And you know, it's kind of where I'm at, and I'm very, very
yeah,
very
I was glad that you followed up, because when you were talking about Joseph Park making people bend over, I got a little scared there. we don't go there, man. This is bonus material, and this is just like, man, we don't go there, by God.
Any
final words you'd like to say to the folks out there?
You know, I want to, you know, I'm saying this, you know, this is something I'd probably say to you off the lines, but, you know, I don't know if I ever really got a chance to say it, you know, and I was there since the beginning, man, you know, since 03, and, you know, I saw a lot of different changes, man. I saw a lot of different regime changes. I saw Vince Russo and Jeff Jarrett and Jerry Jarrett and Russo, and then the Dusty Rhodes, and then the Scott D'Amore, and then back to Jeff, and then to Bruce Pritchard, and to back to Vince Russo, and then Bruce Pritchard, and then Eric Bischoff. You know, I was very fortunate enough, you know, to be able to work with some great, great minds and some people who have done an awful lot in this business. And, you know, I tell you, you did great, and you always treated me fair, and I think you always knew that I was an insecure mess at times, and I was. And you always, always, always treated me good, and that's something I'll never, ever, ever forget. You know, I enjoyed the opportunity to get to know you a little bit and meet your family, and then again, I basically just want to thank you, man. You know, you did a lot for me at a time where, you know, the company was going through a lot of different things, and you always did a lot for me, so I always appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate getting to know your brother, and he was just always so much more fun. But no, we did. We had a lot of fun, and
we
I
did,
always
man.
Enjoyed it. And it was
we did. I always enjoyed our decompression meetings afterwards in the trailer, just sitting around shooting the shit and kind of calming down after the shows. I always looked forward to those, because you always had some very good insights and some very funny things, and it always was a great way to end every TV day.
and I know, you know, because I think my kids experience it a lot, and I'm harder on the ones that I love than I am that I don't care about. If I don't care about you, I'm just usually just going to ignore you. But,
Bruce, I could tell that. You did, and you always, I could tell you took a liking to. You always messed with me, but I always knew, because I saw how you were with other people, and I always knew, you know, this guy's at least engaged with me, so that told me everything I needed to know. And, you know, and like I said, you always, you did a lot of great things for me, and you helped me through some insecurities and stuff, and, you know, we had a lot of fun, man. I remember a ton of belly laughing with you, and David and Matt and so forth. So, you know, just incredible memories, man, and memories only this business can make.
Well, man, I greatly appreciate you jumping on and talking with me, and we're going to put this up on Patreon for folks to check out and just listen and have some fun. And we didn't get too crazy and too anything else, but you're one of my favorite people in the business. I appreciate you, and I thank you for getting on, and we'll see you very shortly on down the road.
Yes, sir, Bruce. I look forward to seeing you. I can't wait, and thank you for everything, man. I love you with all my heart, buddy.
Well, man, thank you. And, Chris, you have a wonderful day, and I will talk to you soon. And I think I'm going to see you soon, am I not? Are you at an MLW event coming up soon?
No, I'm not. I'm not.
What the hell?
I talked to Court. We had a great talk, and Court definitely wants to bring me back in. I think the opportunities will be there shortly. I know he was very happy with Fort Lauderdale, and so I'll definitely be back. You know, I think what you and Court are doing there is just incredible. And when I was down there for that Fort Lauderdale show, man, that thing was – I was really impressed. You know, I had heard a lot of great things about MLW, but, gosh, after being there and actually being a part of it, it was – you guys know how to do it upright, and he's got you heavily involved, so, you know, it can't be anything but a success, you know.
All right, well, since I don't do this normally, and so where do people find you on social media and all that good stuff, man?
The only two places I'm at, but I don't do Facebook and all that, but I am at on Twitter. I'm at The Real Abyss, and then my website is themonsterabyss.com. The two places
right.
You can catch me at.
So Twitter is at The Real Abyss and The Monster Abyss on Facebook.
No, monsterabyss.com.
Oh, shit. You just said because you don't do Facebook, so you're at monsterabyss.com.
Yes, sir.
Not the Monster Abyss, just monsterabyss.com.
Yes.
And that's on Facebook.
Yes, you'll find that on Facebook.
What about that instant picture? You're not on the instant picture? The face cram?
No, man. No, I don't do it. I'm on Instagram, but I very rarely use it at all. I don't even know my handle on it. I signed up a couple of years ago, and I barely use it. I'm a pretty heavy Twitter user. That's kind of where I focus on.
All right, man. Well, Chris, I appreciate you again, man. Thank you much, and have yourself a good one, and best of luck to you.
Thanks, Bruce. I love you. I'll talk to you soon. I hope to see you real soon, man.
You know what? All right, buddy. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.